Infertility is a long emotional journey. For over 20 years, Dr. Ann has been witness to countless stories. From heartbreak to happiness, beautiful to unbelievable, each account is unique. You are not alone. You have options. These are the stories of the families she's treated. These are the true stories of real people like you. This is Everybody's Getting Pregnant But Me with Dr. Ann.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the third episode of Everybody's Getting Pregnant But Me. I am your host, Dr. Ann, and this episode is titled Men Suffer Too, because today we are going to see the emotional side of infertility treatment through the eyes of a man. Fertility is one field that is always focused on the needs of women. After all, women bear all the physical and emotional pain of treatments. However, there seems to be a growing awareness that men suffer emotionally during infertility treatments too. While men may be spending thousands of dollars for fertility treatments and taking time off of work for appointments, it's really easy for men to be forgotten or minimized in the process. Men often feel like they don't even have a voice at doctor's appointments. And it's not just the doctors who are ignoring men. While there are mountains of data looking at the psychological impact of infertility treatment on women, there are very few studies focusing on how men hold up emotionally during infertility treatment. Well, today I am going to introduce you to one very amazing man, John, who went through 8 years of infertility treatment with his wife. And while his story does have a happy ending, the emotional toll it took on John as he went through and supported his wife through their treatment was enormous. Hi, John.
Hey, Dr. B.
So, John, it's good to see you today.
It's very nice to see you. It's been a while.
Mm-hmm. I want you to tell us your story to the best that you can remember. I know it's been a little bit of time, but tell us your story the best you can remember.
A little bit of background real quick. So my wife and I, we met in college. We went through one class together. So we met there and we dated for about 5 years. And after 5 years, you know, we got the speech, either propose or move on. So obviously I proposed. And after about another 5 years, we finally decided to try to have kids. And she was on birth control for the entire duration of our relationship till that point. And after that, she got off birth control and we just thought, this should be pretty simple. You know, we should be, you know, knee deep in kids in a year or two. Well, after trying for, it was about 4 years with no success, we finally realized that something was wrong and we should probably go see a doctor. And I really wasn't involved in a lot of this. And I was talking to my wife about it this morning and I go, I don't remember any of this. And she basically said, because you weren't there, or you weren't part of the conversation. She started by talking to her OBGYN. And that person did some tests and some stuff and said everything was okay. We should just keep trying. So we kept trying. Mm-hmm. And that still didn't work. And at that point, that OBGYN introduced or actually gave a reference to a, I forgot the doctor's name, but a fertility specialist. Mm-hmm. So we went to see this fertility specialist and they did some tests and came back and said, had a ovarian cyst in like the worst spot. And that's why we probably are not getting pregnant. So the first thing was, you know, we had to have that removed. And once that was done, we thought we could try again and nothing happened. So we started with the whole process. I think we started with Clomid. Mm-hmm. All right. We did a couple rounds of that. And then when that still didn't happen, we started with the IVF. Mm-hmm. So this whole process from the time to the first IVF treatment, it was probably about 5, maybe 6 years.
Oh, long time.
Yeah, because we started and we thought we could do it on our own. We had both had physicals with our doctors and we checked out. Mm-hmm. And even with the fertility doctor, when we first met them, they did their standard routine tests and everything came back normal. So they thought I was probably just a cyst that was blocking her tubes And that's why we weren't able to get pregnant. Mm-hmm.
And John, how old were you and your wife at that time?
So when we started this whole process, she was 32. Okay. And by mm-hmm. the time we saw the first IVF, or actually a fertility doctor, she was about 36, 37. Mm-hmm. So...
Mid-30s, yeah.
Yeah. I think I did not realize as a guy that, you know, women once... you get to 30 and beyond, suddenly everything, it kind of drops off a cliff. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. From my perspective, I'm like, oh, I'll be fine. We'll do it. And she'll get pregnant. Because you hear all these stories about 40-year-olds or 45-year-olds mm-hmm. suddenly having kids. So it never crossed my mind that we actually, there is a thing as like a biological clock.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because most of my male patients or spouses of my female patients will tell me the same thing. They just really... didn't realize that when women get in their later 30s, it truly does become more difficult.
Yes. And needless to say, I never did any research. I just assumed this would happen mm-hmm. on our own. It would naturally happen. So as these things started to come into play, it became more and more concerning. And I think the realization that this might not happen started setting in. Mm-hmm. And during this whole process, I had minimal contact with the doctors. I met with the fertility doctor once. She mm-hmm. wanted to do some tests on us. And I met with her when we did the actual IVF, the retrievals. Mm-hmm. And the few times I met with her when we did the actual implants mm-hmm. or when they put the mm-hmm. embryo in her.
Mm-hmm. John, now that you say that, why is it that you weren't meeting with the doctor? Was it just you never really thought about it, or your wife told you not to come, or you were just busy at work, or just didn't come up? It just wasn't something that you would naturally do.
That's a really good question, because looking back on it, it seems like such a stupid move that, you know, I should have been there from the beginning, involved in the conversation. But I think people just take it, and I think my wife did the same thing, that guys, mm-hmm. well, they're just there, they really don't add anything to this. Mm-hmm. And their input really isn't that valuable. Mm-hmm. I was talking to her, and I'd never even met her OBGYN, who put us on, I guess, the first Clomid.
Clomid, yeah.
Clomid treatment. Yeah, I don't even remember his name. I knew, yeah. Never met him. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about this. She goes, you know, if I was in that room, things would have been different, because I would have asked her questions about, this doesn't make sense to me. Can you explain it? Or just... wouldn't have been as emotional about it. Mm-hmm. The sense I get is during this time, we had a friend of ours who went through a process like this. And he basically said, you know, he was much younger than me. Mm-hmm. Usually the guys have nothing to do. It's basically, we can do whatever we want. Everything is on the women. Mm-hmm. And I think that mentality is very prevalent in the whole process.
Mm-hmm. It is. Until you look at it in retrospect.
Yes. Right? Yes. Women do all the physical work. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. They take a lot of the emotional grunt. But I think, you know, looking back on it, the stress that it put on me, it was pretty substantial. I never really talked. To this day, I have mm-hmm. not talked to any of my family members about this whole process. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have not talked to any of my friends about this. The only way I got through this whole process was I was very lucky in that there were a few women at work. Mm-hmm. Two of them happened to be my bosses. Who mm-hmm. one went through this process, so she kind of was very open and talked to me about it. Mm-hmm. The other one did not go through this process. She has two children of her own, but she was very understanding, and she gave me emotional support. When we found out, I think one of the times that we went through after the surgery to remove the cyst and we did the Clomid, I was really thinking she was going to be pregnant. She felt like she was pregnant. Mm-hmm. When we got the result back, I was at work, and that felt so bad that my boss, she recognized, and she knew I was kind of going through this. She kind of said, why don't we get out of here? We literally went to a bar mm-hmm. and she kind of let me vent about it. Mm-hmm. And I had one other coworker who showed up a little later who I talked to about this. And she was my sounding board. It was kind of nice because they weren't emotionally involved in this. So mm-hmm. she could be rational. At the same time, they did not hold any type of judgment towards me or my wife or why we didn't have babies. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have to be afraid to talk to them about that.
It's nice to have somebody.
That's all I had.
You know, it's interesting, though, because women, for the most part, will, the majority of women will talk about it with their friends or family or even a therapist or counselor. Most women do have a lot of people that can relate to it.
Yes.
But that's my question. What are men doing? Are they reaching out? And why is it that they're feeling like they can't reach out? Did you think that you couldn't talk to family or friends? Why didn't you mention it to other people?
It's pretty simple. I think it's when I did kind of bring up this topic with one of my family members, the first question out of that person's mouth was, what's wrong with you? And now, mind you, I'm very good relations with this family member. He's a very good person. He didn't mean it in a bad way or anything like that. But hearing that from him, I'm like, okay, so if I start talking to other male friends, the questions I'm going to ask are not what I really want to talk about. You know?
Was he saying, when he said, what's wrong with you, was he asking physically, what's wrong with you guys and why? Oh, he was asking that.
Yes.
Not anything about your feelings.
No. What's wrong with it physically? And his question is everything okay? So are you shooting blanks? What's going on here?
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, that kind of left a not so great taste in my mouth. And I told my wife, I really don't want to talk to anybody else about that. That was a mistake. I think if I could do this all over again, I would have totally got somebody who was, the word I like to use is emotionally detached to the situation to talk to us so they could be rational and we could be the emotional ones making our rants and they can kind of help guide through us through our decision-making process.
You know, when I talk to my female patients about who they talk to and what friends they talk to, their response, it's very interesting because the friends they're talking to aren't typically interested in the medical part. They're not interested in why exactly is it that you can't get pregnant? That question sometimes doesn't even come up at all. It's more, how are you getting through this and how can I help you and how can I be a sounding board? So it's interesting. Maybe the way men think about it is physically, what is wrong and why aren't you and how do we fix that?
Correct. And on one end, talk to people, actually my family or my friends, I think that's what I've gotten. Like, hey, what is wrong with you? One of my friends who went through this, I realized what he was going through. So, you know, I talked to him and his whole point was, oh, there's nothing I need to do. It's all on the women. And his attitude was, he was a heavy drinker. He smoked. He'd love to go out. And he never changed his routine. I mean, his wife, you know, she couldn't drink. She had to watch what she eat and all this stuff. And I think that's the attitude that most men have.
There's nothing that they can do.
And it's reinforced by the fact that I think a lot of these processes or doctor's visits or whatnot, they're kind of just there. They're not addressed. They don't go, hey, do you have any concerns? Or, you know, you could really do this, help your wife by doing X, Y, and Z. I talked to my wife and she mentioned that she was pretty angry with me because I never changed my lifestyle. We were going through this process. I didn't become healthier. I'd want to drink. And then she'd like, hey, I want to have a drink too. Or I'd go out and do something that, you know, she wasn't supposed to do. And she, I would say, resented me a little bit. She's like, how come I have to suffer through this all by myself? And I guess in general, I don't think society or actually men are aware of, one, that there is an issue with infertility, and two, that they have a much bigger role in how to help resolve this, or they could be much more involved in it.
Yeah.
They just keep it to themselves, and I think that's what I did.
So how did you, then you talked to a few people at work. How else did you deal with your emotions during this time?
Oh, I yelled at my wife a lot.
Yeah, it came out as anger.
Anger. It came out as horrible communication, you know. It would never be about the pregnancy or anything to deal with that. It would be other little things that would trigger it, you know, and we just get into it over that. And here's the silliest and one of the most intense fights that we had. We don't even have a baby child, and we got into it about who would be the godparents.
Oh,
yeah. I was under the thing, oh, you know, I'm Catholic. And my family is very conservative, and I wanted a married couple to be the godparent. And my wife said no. And
but yet we don't have a baby.
But we had this giant fight, and that went on for like I think years we used to fight about that. And thinking back on it, it wasn't the godparents we were really fighting about. I think it was just the way we were venting about the process.
Yeah, yeah, so, interesting. So it came out as a lot of anger.
It did.
Did you feel like your wife's feelings were being addressed by doctors and friends and family a lot more than yours were? Were you wishing that somebody would ask you somewhere along the way, well, how are you feeling? What's going on with you?
I think definitely yes. I don't think my wife, she didn't talk to her family either. Hmm. And she didn't really talk to any of her friends. Mm-hmm. She mentioned to a couple of people, so we didn't really share, or I guess we never really had any kind of support. She especially, because she couldn't even talk to her boss saying, hey, I'm trying to get pregnant, because that would look bad for her career. But definitely from a doctor's perspective, I think they can engage men a lot more and tell them, yes, physically, this is the only piece you have to do, but there's this whole other, you know, suite of things you could do to help your wife and help this process along. Mm-hmm. And that could be anywhere from, like, I think back on it, I could say, here's the entire range of processes that you could go through. Here's what happens if that's not possible. What I would really suggest is someone like Jen, having someone like that be involved from the beginning to help de-stress us.
And Jen is the counselor that you ended up seeing.
Yes, Jen. My wife and I went to her at the very end of this process, where I think I finally was fully engaged, and I said, I don't want to be the passenger, I'm going to drive. I need you to take my feelings into account. And that's the point where we engaged her, and, you know, we were able to come to a decision. It was weird. When we started with Jen, we were on two complete different sides. And even though we were both making logical arguments, or we made good points, it took her kind of just saying, hey, did you think about it this way? Or what's this other person really trying to say? Is this to hear ourselves? You know,
so finally going to a fertility counselor was what really helped you.
It helped make the final decision very simple.
Yeah.
It kind of cut out all the other clutter. We realized what we wanted to do. We were comfortable with it. And there wasn't any kind of resentment saying, hey, you're getting your way, or I'm not getting my way. And you're not looking at my point of view. You're not respecting me. We got through all that. I think that was very, very helpful.
John, so tell me a little bit more about the story. So you went through this IVF treatment and then a little bit more about what ended up happening.
So the first doctor, the IVF doctor, that place was so cold. And I think that's another reason guys don't want to engage. Anytime I went to that office, the first thing they'd ask for is, hey, there's payment for this process. And it made it seem like a very transactional. It was very transactional. I was just, you know, patient A, B, C, D, whatever. You're here to do this. We don't really care about if it succeeds or what it does. And I think my wife dealt with this a lot more than I did, because she was dealing with them. So I that place left such a bad taste in my mouth. We actually started looking at adoption.
Did you, John, did you feel like when you went with her to those few appointments that you were just there to pay the bill?
Yes.
Yeah.
I was there to pay the bill, and that was it. You know, or you know, if I had to do whatever, you know, you go into that closet, take care of it, and come back. And I'm like, my God. So, and there were other guys there, and it's like we all had our heads down, and it was just, it was just like we were beaten. I don't know. It just felt so bad. So after the failure with that, and mind you, not only did we think we did three rounds of IVF, we started with our first one. And when that didn't work, we did the genetic testing. And that was the other piece of this whole process that was building. It was insurance and the financial costs. So the genetic testing, as you know, is not covered out of your own pocket. I think the ones we did was like $8,000, and we did two, three. So it was like over 20 grand.
It's starting to get really expensive.
And we were on my wife's insurance, and they were starting to say, okay, that's it. You get so many tries, blah, blah, blah. And we were starting to pay out of our pocket, and that financial piece started to take a hit. And it wasn't until I switched jobs and I got a much better insurance that we switched over, and that kind of alleviated some of that. But some of the medications for IVF isn't covered by insurance or they pay very little of it. Mm-hmm. And that was not a piece that was starting to boil over.
Yeah, that must be a whole nother stress. And how did you and your wife deal with that? Did you see eye to eye on that?
I would say, no, we didn't. Mm-hmm. We didn't. She wanted to do certain things. And I'm like, wow, that's a lot of money. We're not really getting anywhere. And that first doctor's office, since it was so, like I said, you were just patient A, B, or C. They didn't care about you. Mm-hmm. Just to hand over tens of thousands of dollars to these people, it made it feel even more, it was very sterile. Mm-hmm. And I just did not feel good about it. I mean, I let her know, and let's just say she won most of those battles, because mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, I understand. You're doing the physical part of it, so fine, we'll do it your way.
Mm-hmm. So you felt like you had to give in.
I had to. Mm-hmm. I mean, what else? Mm-hmm. I felt like I had to, but looking back on it now, I should have said, no, I'm not comfortable with this. Yes, you're doing all these things, but let's just regroup and redo this.
Interesting, yeah.
And that's what we eventually did. Mm-hmm. After the failures there, I said, we just need a break. I can't mm-hmm. continue on this process. It was just too much mentally and financially. So we took a break and we tried something different, because mm-hmm. I guess the way I think is, if you're trying to do something and it's not working, and if you keep doing the same thing, it's probably not going to work. Mm-hmm. So she was going to an acupuncturist, and they kind of made the comment, maybe you should look at it holistically and not just treat the infertility, treat everything all at once, mm-hmm. which kind of made sense. So we tried that, and kind of weird, because that's how we ended up meeting you.
Mm-hmm. John, when you were at the acupuncturist, were you on board with all that? Did you feel comfortable with that piece?
So it sounds a little wonky talking about it. Initially, I was not. But once I talked to, we interviewed three different acupuncturists, of people who help people with mm-hmm. infertility. Yep. One was Chinese, and he was very traditional, and he was fine. Mm-hmm. There was nothing wrong with him. I just didn't feel it.
Yeah.
The second person was more, he talked a big game, but I just didn't believe in him. And then finally, the third person we met, they were probably unique is the best mm-hmm. way I can say mm-hmm. it, the way they approached it. Did I buy in when I first talked to them? Mm-hmm. We were talking about spirit babies and stuff and doing chants. And I'm like, what? Uh-huh. But as I talked to them, and the more I talked to them, I realized, okay, so maybe all this stuff sounds really, really different, mm-hmm. but the stuff that's been scientifically done hasn't worked. So what? It's not going to hurt if I give this a try.
Mm-hmm. Give it a try. And John, it's sounding now more and more that you are very involved with this. If you're going to meet with these acupuncturists.
Yes.
Now, has that changed over the years? Are you becoming more a part of it?
Absolutely. Now it is. I wouldn't say I drive all the decisions, but we're definitely maybe not 50-50, but I'll call it 55-45.
Yeah.
And I'll say I'm the 55 at this point, because I'm really more involved.
Why is that, that you became so much more involved after several years?
Because the results of mm-hmm. what happened, it just didn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. We're spending all this time and energy and money, mm-hmm. and we're running around circles. And as I got involved, you know, the first thing I think I had to tell myself is, look, the reality is none of this was going to work. We may never have kids. I think I had to make peace with that. Mm-hmm. And once I made peace with that, things got a lot easier for me.
Interesting, yeah.
Yeah, because I'm not sure, and I think I mentioned it with you or somebody else, that, you know, mm-hmm. people get so desperate mm-hmm. after going through this and failure after failure after failure. Mm-hmm. They're willing to adopt a kid with no hands, no legs. Mm-hmm. And
I remember that conversation.
Remember that? Yeah.
Right.
And I said, I would never be that person. Mm-hmm. And I did not want to be that person. If that's the way, you know, other people want to do it, fine. But I just couldn't be that person.
Mm-hmm. How did your wife deal with your viewpoint now? So you're saying this may never happen. And what was her attitude when you were saying that?
She was not happy to have me utter the words, but she realized the truth of it after. Okay. Mm-hmm. this was probably like 8 years on from our process. Mm-hmm. She was like, okay,
long time.
It's a long time. And she was under the impression that if we didn't have kids, that we can always adopt. Mm-hmm. And so we've been looking at adoption for about 3 years at that point. Again, I got lucky because one of the HR people at work, she was having issues as well. And she mentioned that she had a friend who just adopted a baby from South America. Mm-hmm. And we were able to meet this couple and they kind of talked to us all the positives and all the negatives. Mm-hmm. So we had some actual insight into how the adoption process worked. Mm-hmm. And that is not a pretty process. It is, it's very time consuming. And it's almost as if you want a baby boy, a healthy baby boy, you are competing with a ton of people. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, we're a little older, and I just didn't feel very confident that we could win one of those mm-hmm. child winning or child bids.
That wasn't for you at all.
It wasn't. I mm-hmm. just didn't feel right about that. I'm like, hey, yeah, I wanted to adopt a kid, but I had to convince the mother who may or may not have wanted the kid. I don't know. And then the whole adoption, we talked about this. Look, you gave up your child. That's it. I don't want to deal with you ever again. And all the adoption agencies, like, it has to be open. And I just didn't understand that. So this person who made this choice keeps to have input on this child going forward. That's not what I wanted to sign up for. So mm-hmm. that was a battle between my wife and I. I think she wanted to go down the adoption path. And I said, that's not for me. Obviously, IVF isn't working. So what other choices do we have?
There's so many things you have to see eye to eye to
yes.
on, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so
that's a big challenge.
It really is. Mm-hmm. The problem is, if you sit down and think about it logically, you can probably come to the best thing that works for you. But your emotions are so overwhelming.
Yeah, there's no way of doing it without being emotional.
No, it just mm-hmm. you go through like, I'm a failure. I can't get this done. All my family, all my friends, everybody's got kids. I can't do this. And it's like you have all this stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, how come we can't have kids? Here we are. We have established careers. We have a house. You know,
mm-hmm. you've been together for a long, long time now.
Yeah, we at this time, you know, we were almost 15 years. Yeah. Over 15 years that we were together, and we can't have kids. And here are people who go out and do one night stand, and they have 10 kids by 10 different, I don't know.
And you're frustrated to know
it. Very frustrated. Mm-hmm. And we talked about that. That was kind of a bonding experience.
Yeah.
But at the same time, that frustration and that sadness, it's really hard to kind of put it off the side and say, okay, let's just do this.
Mm-hmm. While you were going through all of this now you're very actively involved, are you feeling like your wife is actually being attentive to your feelings? Because I hear a lot from women who tell me, well, my husband isn't as attentive as I want him to be. And other women say, oh, he's been so attentive. But what about the flip side of that? Is your wife paying attention to how you're feeling and how you're going through this?
Yes, I think she has. I think it was a learning process for her.
Yeah.
I think talking to Jen and kind of having Jen say, hey, this is what he's trying to say. Are you hearing the same thing that I'm hearing? Kind of made her realize, okay, so let me understand. And I mean, we talk about this when we had our child. That was something that God has, we were unified. That was the first time, I think, this whole process, when we made that decision to have Paige and the manner we had Paige, we were on the same page. Mm-hmm. And that was the first time we felt good in the sense like, okay, we have a little bit of control. We're completely okay with what happened. Mm-hmm. We both were happy at that point.
John, so can you just tell me then, after you had this discussion about adoption and you decided that's not what you wanted to do, and then you ended up moving forth?
Yes. So the only other option we had was either we had to kidnap a child or...
and were you in agreement about that?
I think she was more in agreement than I was.
There you go.
Or it was surrogacy. And she was not for surrogacy for many reasons. And she told me about it because she didn't feel right with all these kids that we bring another, you know, we're being a little selfish trying to bring another kid in this world. Mm. And she didn't feel comfortable with another woman carrying our child. I mean, these are things I didn't think about in the sense.
It's nice to hear how much you're talking and being honest with each other, though, at this point.
Yes.
That's the great thing.
It was a lot of pain and struggle to get to this point.
Yeah, it sounds like a long process, but it definitely resulted in something good.
It did.
And probably a stronger relationship now.
Oh, yeah. Now, I always told her that we have to be unified when it comes to dealing with our daughter. Otherwise, she will run right over us.
Yeah.
So, surrogacy. And the only thing that set us back on that was financial. If we, I'd look back at it now and I did the math, I think it was a little under $200,000 out of our own pocket that we spent over a decade trying to have a kid. If we had taken that money up front and just said, let's just have a surrogate do it, we would have probably saved about $50,000.
Oh, but who knows? Yeah. We have to go through the steps.
We have to. So, yeah. And we had talked about surrogacy and she kind of looked at it, but financially just did not make any sense. And we got lucky. Finally, something broke. I mean, obviously meeting you was very wonderful. I think you helped reset us and refocus. You helped us lead us to Jen. And from there, I guess our good luck continued and we were able to find this agency. And it's just the weirdest coincidence. Their name was Lotus, and I'm very fond of a lotus. I don't know if you know what a lotus plant is.
Mm-hmm. I do.
Yeah. Yes. And I remember as a kid seeing them, and I'm going, most people, why would they name this agency Lotus?
Yeah.
And I just reached out to them, and it just happened to work out because one of the people who runs it, he actually was born in the U.S., and he no longer lives in the U.S., and he had partnered with somebody else who also doesn't live in the U.S., but she frequents the U.S. a lot. And we just started talking, and to make a long story short, they're based in Ukraine. This is about 2 years ago. Mind you, there's a civil war going on in Ukraine. And my wife is like, why in the name of God are we going to Ukraine? And her father actually lived in the Ukraine in the 70s. And he talked about stories about how he'd have to brush his teeth with vodka because the water was so bad.
Of course.
Or his favorite story was he lived in a apartment complex. He was there for work.
Yeah.
And there were no lights in the hallway. So he decided to buy some lights and put them in the hallway lights. Mm-hmm. He went to work. And when he came back in the evening, all the lights were gone.
Oh, no.
So she was like, oh, my God.
We're going where?
So I talked to this agency and they seemed legit, but I just didn't believe that. And don't think I'm going to hand over a ton of money until I meet you. Mm-hmm. So we actually flew out to the Ukraine for a long weekend, met with the agency, met with the doctors. And
John, I'm going to interrupt you. One more thing, because it amazes me that now it seems you are so incredibly involved in all of this process, maybe even more so than your wife after all these years.
Yes.
So I'm seeing the change.
Well, I don't think she's just as involved.
Okay.
It's like sometimes she doesn't want to deal with, I call it the politics or the red tape of it.
Right.
So I end up dealing with it a little bit more and that's all. But as when it comes to decision-making time, she's definitely there.
You guys are right on board with each other.
Right.
Oh, so good to hear.
Yeah. So, but Ukraine, let me tell you, Kiev is fantastic.
Yeah.
We actually talked to a couple who went through Lotus and I couldn't believe what she said. I'm like, oh, she probably doesn't know what she's talking about. She had mentioned that she would go back to Ukraine, Kiev, to vacation. I'm thinking, what are you talking about? Kiev is like this third world rundown capital, right?
Not at all.
Oh,
so different than what you'd expect.
Yeah. The only bad experience we had the first time we went to Kiev, we got hustled by a priest.
It must have been interesting.
It was. He was an Orthodox priest. He walked up on the street and as he started talking, and I go, this is not going to be good. And he just wanted a donation. He was kind of funny and charming. And I said, fine, here.
Let's go with it.
Just go with it. But I met the people. And one of the things that was very reassuring for us as a couple was we got a chance to go to the clinic and meet the doctors who would control this whole process. And I really wanted to know what they said compared to our prior experiences after talking to you about it. And I know we used you as our source of truth is kind of what I would say. We check things with you. Like, does this make sense or does that make sense?
Right.
And if it sounded
just
really
want kind of a double check from the medical standpoint.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it all seemed to work out there. And we, the coolest part was we got a chance. I said, can you please have the surrogate there? So we wanted to meet her. We only met her for about half hour, 45 minutes. Mm-hmm. But in that half hour and 45 minutes, we established a relationship that we have to this day. Mm-hmm. Even though she lives in Ukraine, she says, I want pictures, and we still talk.
Mm-hmm. You did a great experience.
That was great.
Going down there, it's amazing.
Yeah, that woman, she was so good. She was younger than us. Mm-hmm. And some of the things I really appreciate about Lotus and how they set this up was they only hired women who already had a child. Mm-hmm. If you didn't have a child, you could not be a surrogate. And the laws there are a little bit different in the sense that that's your genetic material. Even if after birth they go, they want to keep it, legally they can't. Mm-hmm. That's not their child. Mm-hmm. That made it a little bit more reassuring for us. Mm-hmm. You hear stories about how surrogates give birth and they're like, well, no, I'm going to keep it. Yeah. And I'm not sure what the laws are in the U.S., but being Ukrainian kind of worked to our advantage.
Right. Yeah. Things are different depending on the country.
Yes.
So, okay. So the best part, you went through the surrogacy. Yes. And?
Well, obviously having Paige is the best part. But the experience of the first time when we landed in Ukraine to picking her up.
Yeah.
It's like a dream. Now she's 18 months and she's not so much of a dream. She's just a very bossy little kid.
She's a beautiful dream.
She's a very beautiful dream. But that whole process, having the right people, Jen, yourself, the surrogate herself, all kind of saying, relax, it's all fine, it's all good. I think that was such a wonderful experience. After years and years of failure and just basically running into the wall over and over again.
But it sounds so much like those years of failure prepared you for all of this, that they put you in a different spot emotionally.
It did. I think those years of failure helped us to communicate better.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
It helped us be more really truthful about how we felt about certain things and helped us get to the same page. And the key to that was before we started that, we said, look, we're going to do this one more time. And if it doesn't happen, we're fine with it. Mm-hmm. We can just move on. And we don't need to adopt a kid. We don't need to do anything else. Mm-hmm. And I think we needed to get to that point. I think fear of failure is what cripples a lot of people. They got to keep trying and trying and trying and trying and trying. Mm-hmm. And I think we got to, it's okay. Hey, we tried. It didn't work. It wasn't meant to be. We're going to go live our lives.
Yeah. I love your story, Jen, because I could see how things changed through the years. Yeah. It just emotionally between the two of you and how you related to each other. And you became such good partners through the whole thing.
We did.
It's amazing. So tell me, what advice would you give to a man who's just starting this process?
Oh, that would be two things. Number one, be comfortable with the doctor you're dealing with. Be very involved. And if they don't give you the time of day, or if they don't pay attention to you, or if you can't reach them directly to talk to them, they're probably not the right doctor for you. I think having that relationship with the doctor is very important. It's just as important for the man as it is for the woman.
Such good advice. Yeah. Something that's often not thought of.
Yeah. I think that would be my number one thing. And number two is you too have a biological clock. I think you have to realize that, and you'd have to do your own due diligence, figure out what's the best step for you. There's the, you know, hey, try on your own. If that doesn't work, start with Clomid. If that doesn't work, then we'll do IVF. If that doesn't work, think about donor eggs. If that doesn't work, you might want to think about a surrogate. And if that, you know, there's all these steps, and there's not, like for me, there's nothing definitive statistically that said any of these would work. Mm-hmm. It's something that you have to come to, or you have to feel good about, or you have to figure out. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, there's no way to figure that out until you do a couple of these and you fail. And so be ready for that failure. It's okay. Mm-hmm. And you can try something else. I think don't be afraid of that. And you don't have to follow those steps. Maybe you just go, screw this. Mm-hmm. We'll go right to IVF.
Yeah.
Or if you can have financial resources, maybe you go right to a surrogate, you know.
Mm-hmm. But have a plan.
Yes. And it's not the plan that your fertility clinic or your doctor or your friends, they provide. It's something that you kind of have to figure out. Mm-hmm. That's very tricky. But if you can get that, I think you're golden.
And you know in your heart that that's what you want to do.
Right. And, you know, like I said, and it's okay if none of those work out. You know, you get to retire early, you get to vacation more often, buy that fancy car or house or whatever. So,
mm-hmm. Oh, great advice, John. I love hearing your story. It was great.
It was a decade in the making.
Yeah, it's a long, long time.
Yeah. And I think, like I said, the back end of it was way happier. Meeting the people that I met during that process helped change me, not as just my relationship with my wife, but as a person. It gave me so much more perspective and more patience. Mm-hmm.
I think so, too. I find that, too. You learn so much going through it.
Yeah.
And what a great dad you are. Thank you. So, and you are very, very patient, John.
No, thank you for sharing.
Oh, thank you for telling your story.
Absolutely.
I will see you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Everybody's Getting Pregnant But Me with Dr. Ann Borkowski. For additional information, a copy of this podcast, or to get in touch with Dr. Ann, please go to www.NorthShoreFertility.com. Till we see you again, stay focused and keep moving towards your dreams.
This podcast was edited and produced by Sonic Transformation. Sonic Transformation, your sound refined.